Hi, everybody. This is Armand Demel with you. Avec le Mind Positive. Here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Boy, oh boy, oh boy. Bitterness. You know, the bitterness is such a funny thing. I was going to do a program today about bitterness, trying to understand why people are bitter. Why people are nasty, why people have this. And it turns out that the American Psychiatric Association is actually trying to develop a syndrome called the bitterness syndrome. They say it's so common, so deeply destructive, that they want to kind of list it as some kind of thing. Now, you got to be careful, because when they invent things, they always invent drugs to fix it. You never know what their motive is. But bitterness, you know, bitterness. You know, you have a right to be bitter. So I was looking at bitterness, but then it became even more important. I sat with a couple who came to see me. And the bitterness was flying. And I said, now here's something. What happens to a couple who love each other? Where does bitterness come from? Where did they get nasty with each other? How does that happen? Spoke to my associate about it. And I said, you know, could this be like the prolactin thing that happens post-orgasmic with men? What it seems that, some of the studies they found that the hormone prolactin may dampen arousal after there's an orgasm that men have. And he says that there's a surge in the hormones, adrenaline, noradrenaline, and prolactin, that happened during sex. But prolactin is like it's linked in functions to both men and women. Because think about lactin, you know, prolactin. It has to do with lactose. It has to do with milk breastfeeding in women. Is prolactin the kind of thing? It tends to be inversely tied to levels of dopamine. So it kind of says that's a good feeling thing. It kind of says that the opposite. It's inversely tied to the levels of dopamine. And to begin with, dopamine is like the craving neurochemical. All of the craving seems to come with dopamine, you know. And then the opposite of that is prolactin, which is shove it away. I don't want to get anywhere near you. It gets very confusing when we think about it, because what are we? A walking bunch of just hormones and neurotransmitters? That's what we think we are. At times I feel like I am, but then I look at it and I say, hey, wait a minute. If I am biochemically programmed to be one way, do I have to be that way? That's my question. And my question is, can I do something about it? Not just change the chemistry by drinking wheatgrass, but can I do something about it using my mind? Most people I know who are in trouble have no choice over the bitterness that comes to their mind. Once they get it, they believe it. They believe this to be true. If you're lucky, you have been listening to the positive mind, and you don't believe it. You say, you know, this may just be a chemical reaction. I'm going to see what I could do about it. Because I tell you, friends, preserving true love is a magnificent thing. There is, you may be tested over and over again, and I think there are a lot of tests in a relationship. There are tests that you have when you have children. You know, you have children, you got to go through childbirth, and you got to go through bearing the children. There are tests you have economically. You got to earn enough money. You got to have a shelter over your head. You know, there are things that have to happen in a relationship. But in a relationship, there are going to be these trials. And if you survive these trials, you have a relationship that is unlike 99% of the ones out there. Because most of the long-term relationships we see are bitter people. There's a bitterness that exists between the two people. Rarely is there an honesty. There's a kind of a bitterness somewhere in the background. Even if they're an older couple, you know, like they're in their 80s, they're kind of hanging out with each other because I want somebody to be there when I die. Kind of the deal, you know, you're my kind of roommate. But the love that could exist if you challenge, that's the stuff I want to go for. And I want you to go for. So in light of that, in light of getting past what we call, get this word, biological imperatives, meaning mandates of the body, things said by the bodies that say that they say to me, you know, and they will say to men, for example, what they're talking about with prolactin. They say a man has an orgasm. He kind of distances himself from the woman or from the man if he's with a man, but he distances himself. And they say that's not because the guy's afraid of intimacy. Those are nice words we like to use. It's because the chemical prolactin is actively at work. It kind of says to us, we want you to have one orgasm and move on. You know, it's going to say, you know, have this, have sex this one time and then get out of here. Go move on and have sex with somebody else and then get out of there and go have sex with somebody else. It's nature's way of you know, spreading the wealth. But we get stuck with that. Then what happens is you make love with someone and suddenly you get this feeling like you want to get out of there. And you say, what's wrong with me? And she says, what's wrong with you? Why don't you want to hug? Why don't you want to lay here? And he says, I don't know, but I got to get out of here. I got to keep my socks on. I got to keep one foot out of the bed. I've got to go take care of business. I have to make a phone call. I have to take a shower. You know? I know people who have to do so much after sex, they have rituals that they follow. And these rituals can be very costly because they mean distance. All right, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Even though you think, I call it The Positive Mind here on WBAI, a station that is working towards the positive, I call it A Positive Mind, but I talk about misery. So how could I be talking about the positive mind and talking about misery at the same time? Well, you see, the truth of it is the reason we have misery is because we don't understand it. The more you understand, the more positive you could be. I do not deny the pain in this world. I am okay with pain. I'm willing to feel it. I'm willing to travel through it. And if I have to take you with me, I'll bring you along. If I got to drag you by your hair or your toes, I'll do it. Armand DeMille with you. Let me give you something. I found a thing for you, a lovely, lovely thing. Bit of information. Now, this is a wonderful piece of stuff from Cupid's Poisoned Arrow. I hope this works because we're trying it today. Here we go.
Unfortunately, biology has programmed us so that, on average, our romances tend to deteriorate over time, and sometimes very rapidly. In fact, those couples who are natural swans are so rare that researchers refer to them as outliers, or exceptions to the rule. So what is the rule? Studies reveal that after a brief honeymoon period, mates typically find each other more irritating as a marriage continues, or as long as it lasts. Mysteriously, this phenomenon doesn't affect relationships with relatives, pets, or friends. What is different about romantic relationships? Now, tension in intimate relationships can obviously come from many factors, such as money management differences, childhood trauma, or personal eccentricities. But there is also a hidden biological factor that magnifies them all. It shows up as an uneasy, often subconscious, feeling of irritation, which makes any other challenges more difficult to resolve. And wild as it may seem, this factor could just be the common denominator in behaviors that seem quite unrelated, such as bickering, insensitivity, oversensitivity, infidelity, and sexless marriages. It turns out that this factor has been present in our genetic programming for many millions of years. It's just becoming more obvious now, for reasons I'll mention later. The fact is, we have two conflicting biological programs at work in our love lives. I think of one of them as our mating program, and the other as our bonding program. Let's look at the mating program first. We are mammals, and the typical mammalian mating program looks a lot like this. Start by pursuing a mate or seducing a mate with tremendous drive. Mate furiously. In fact, in some species, vigorous mating helps prepare the female for pregnancy. Then, after repeated copulations, when sexual desire is exhausted, move on to a novel partner. It's worth noting that mammals have no clear idea why they move on when they do. This subconscious program simply makes the former mate look like boiled cabbage, and an unfamiliar potential mate often look like a box of delicious chocolate truffles, at least for a while. Pair bonding is unique to a mere handful of mammals, including humans. We pair bonders evolved to get a buzz not just from sex, but also from romantic companionship. Why do some mammals pair bond? Because their infants survive better with two caregivers. We need our parents to fall in love, at least for long enough for them both to fall in love with us. If we do what we've always done, we'll get what we've always gotten. We're wired that way. Yet we can learn to steer for the results we want, whatever those may be, if we think of our mating and bonding programs as two separate pedals that drive our intimate relationships. I think of the mating program, the urge to exhaust ourselves sexually as thoroughly as possible, as the habituation pedal, because it so often causes partners to get fed up with or habituate to each other. The bonding program, on the other hand, is the harmony pedal, because it genuinely makes togetherness more appealing and deeply satisfying. Although bonding originated as a mechanism for bonding infant mammals to their caregivers, we're encoded to find these behaviors, such as skin-to-skin contact, exchanging smiles, and generous touch, pleasurable at any age. This is why we can use them strategically to strengthen our enthusiasm for lasting intimacy indefinitely, if that's a goal. We can also use carezza to transform intercourse itself into a soothing, non-goal-oriented bonding behavior for use when procreation is not desired. I'd like to add that obviously humanity's subconscious mating agenda is not a new challenge, but there are two developments that make it more urgent than ever to cultivate authentic harmony between couples. Our culture has changed. We have more freedom and more sexual stimulation. Until recently, across much of the globe, church and state kept a rein on sexual expression. Marriages were often arranged. Divorce was impossible and then heavily censored. Birth control was unavailable or prohibited. And adultery and sex before marriage were strictly punished. All these features of life ensured that any emotional separation between partners was partly masked by the fact that they had to continue to live together and raise their inevitable children. These circumstances also meant that there was just plain less fooling around after the honeymoon period, in most couples' lives at least. That left relationships often uncomfortably stagnant, but less volatile. Today's social and civil sanctions, in the West at least, can no longer hold mates in artificial bondage. Now that's fine, and some of us see it as a good thing. But it means that our underlying mammalian mating program is ripping couples and families apart with increasing efficiency. As we no longer live in tribes based on mutual support, this outcome is agonizing for all concerned. With each new generation, there are fewer and fewer couples who escape the misery of habituation. There's another very potent but unacknowledged factor also at work today. We are guinea pigs in a massive international experiment. Today's overtly sexual media routinely evokes supernormal, that is, above normal, sexual stimulation in our brains. And I'm not just talking about porn, but our ads, our clothing, our mainstream magazines, our TV shows. We don't think about it because it's so widespread. But an internet user, for example, can see more extreme erotica in an afternoon than his ancestors would have seen in a lifetime. And our brains may just not be equipped to handle this overload. There is a way to make love so that you get the benefits of union without tripping the habituation switch. And some of them are noted on this slide. The Gnostic Christians stumbled upon something they called the Sacrament of the Bridal Chamber, which seems to be based on these principles. The courtly love tradition 1,000 years later in the south of France. The Chinese Taoists in China for thousands of years have known it. Now, the version of what I call bonding-based sex that I find the most accessible, simply because the texts about it are more modern, is called carezza. My girlfriend and I have been trying non-orgasmic sex with screw-ups for maybe 4 months now. We are both in our mid-20s and have been together for about 6 months. We started our relationship really slowly. We would hold eye contact for hours, literally, and gently touch and stroke one another on the arms or the belly. Or we would touch our feet together under the table if other people were around. Things progressed, and we started to kiss, and there was more stroking and touching while lying down in bed. Every afternoon, we would rush off after work to be together for a few hours. I didn't realize it then, but we were pretty much doing some of the exchanges. Now, as an aside, the exchanges are a series of 21 playful, affectionate activities for couples who want a structured way to transition toward carezza, and they are in the back of the book, Cupid's Poisoned Arrow.
And that's Marnia Robinson from the book Cupid's Poisoned Arrow, but she makes a really good point about the chemistry of what happens to us. And here comes the question, you know, I mean, so much of us seems to be programmed, and the other point she made that I thought was so important, we are so stimulated sexually nowadays, so much more than we ever were before. It's in everything. It's in advertising. They discovered it in advertising. They said sex sells. So it's everywhere you go. Sex, 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 sex. And it's going to hit you in one way or another. It's either going to hit you as an aversion. You're going to feel a bad feeling towards it, or you're going to feel a great feeling towards it. But you rarely will just pass it by. Now, what happens to you when you get stimulated like this all the time? And stimulated doesn't necessarily mean turned on. It just means something is pushing your buttons. So something is pushing your search buttons. Something is pushing your lust buttons. Something is pushing your aggressive buttons. Something is pushing the button when you're not even aware of it. You're, along with sex, what we think of as sex hormones are just a bunch of hormones with a little bit added to it, but it's the same hormones. We're talking about real activity, we're talking about drive, we're talking about excitement. So the very same activities that you may feel in playing or in having a game or doing something gets triggered with sex, but then it adds some to it. And it adds to it this kind of reproductive urgency that gets added to the, quote, sex drive, which gets stimulated by all of the advertising and stuff around you. So here's the deal. The deal is, once we are and our mind is so filled with this stuff, we become bent out of shape. We get into relationships and we're no longer who we are. We are a mass of chemical responses. You love someone. You make love. You're in a nice, new, exotic, different place. You have a wonderful time. And then suddenly you wish she would turn into a pizza. You know what I mean? Suddenly you feel yourself so distant just because, you know, it was complete. Now you're done and you just want to, I wish you would go away. How could you feel like that? How could you feel that way towards someone you love when you feel much better towards the dog and the cat? You know what I mean? Well, what Marnie Robinson said is it's not just the orgasm that does it. She says that this is natural for all couples nowadays because of the way we are built to have this kind of embitterness towards each other, to have this distance, this prolactic kind of reaction. And I think what she also doesn't say is we get a reduction in another chemical, oxytocin, the bonding chemical. So we may feel that with our children. We may feel it with our cat. But then we can't feel it with our mate. And we say, oh no, I guess it's over. It's been long enough. I guess we've had a long time together. It's time to go. I say no. You gotta fight it. If you and your mate have the power and the will to step up to not just repeating life over and over again in its stupid way, to not be living like you're just two cockroaches or two ants who are just repeating their biological imperatives. You know, as smart as they are, they're still just ants. But if you decide that you're going to do more than that, then you have to take it on, and you take it on completely, including the chemistry of it. You say, okay, honey, I understand that right now you feel turned off. Right? And you tell me what you need. And she or he says to you, I need a different place for us to be. I need us to have unique settings. I need us not to be in the same thing over and over again. And take it seriously. Take that seriously, what she's saying. She's given you a tip. She's given you a hint. She's saying to you, please, let's fight for each other. I don't think fighting for each other is things that most people argue about. You know, they argue about the silliest, stupidest thing, like your mother doesn't like you, or, you know, your ex-wife is involved, or the children. You fight, when you're fighting for each other, it's like the stupidest stuff. When you're fighting for each other, you're fighting to stay connected. And it's such a hard thing because it's so easy to just dump your mate. I'm so used to that. That's so easy. Dump your mate and move on to somebody else. It's so easy. But sticking in there, whew, not as a sacrificial lamb, but sticking in there and fighting for it, that's an amazing thing. Our telephone number is 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. 212-209-2900. I'd like to take your calls related to this. And I know it's going to take you a while to get there. 212-209-2900. Let's talk about Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. The relationship between the intense high of something like dopamine and the subsequent lingering unpleasantness, the Medusa symptoms associated with prolactin, which usually follows orgasm, help scientists explain why intimate relationships often fall into a manic depressive cycle. One day he looks like Dr. Jekyll, the next day he looks like Mr. Hyde. One day you're looking at her and you're thinking she's the most delicious thing you could possibly imagine, the next day she's chopped liver. Especially if you don't like chopped liver. And you wonder to yourself, I have no interest whatsoever. Working, my friends. to try to make relationships work. Working not just with words, but working with understanding, that's really essential. 212-209-2900. I'd like to take one of your calls now. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand. This is Jack from Queens.
Hello, Jack.
How you doing, buddy?
Good.
You know, you mentioned sacrificial lamb, and that's what induced me to call you, because that's me. I have the most pain that I can ever remember having in any situation in breaking up with my ex-girlfriends, let me put it that way. Any girl since I've been in college. When we break up, and it's usually on her part, could be a year, could be 6 months, could be in that range, I have hurt that is intolerable. I obsess over this situation for 10 days to a month, and then it's over. But that period of time for me, I would be the sacrificial lamb and take whatever it would to be with that person. And that's my situation.
Well, have you ever heard the series I've done called About Men?
No.
It's essential. One of the things we learned, we did some significant research because, you know, I have this great love and appreciation of men as we're trying for our adultness without having had any decent models for it. So I did a series, which I strongly recommend to you.
Called, how do I go about getting it?
About men. Call my office and see if they have it here.
What form would it be in?
It would be in CDs.
Okay.
But what one of the essential parts of it was that men have the worst time leaving their mothers. And then whenever a symbolic mother comes along, it's the equivalence of death. And so what happens is, at the beginning, the pain of separation is so huge because it never was done properly originally. You were bonded to your mother, were you not?
No, I wasn't.
What was your relationship with her?
Well, there really wasn't too much until I became an adult and she was in, you know, in her elder years.
But what about when she was in her younger years? Was she not available?
She was available, but not in a loving kindness way that I could actually relate to.
Right, right. Let's go that. You had a mother who was not there?
She was there physically, but that's about it.
Wow. What did that feel like?
Well, at the time,
you didn't know any different,
right? At the time, yeah, exactly. At the time, I found outside sources to satisfy my needs, you know? I was a rebellious youth.
Can you understand a young man would do anything to get that maternal love?
Absolutely. That's me. That's why this hurt. I'm aware.
And so now we're aware that with the absence of your mother's love, the thought of losing it once you have it is twice as excruciating.
Absolutely. More than twice. For me, it's intolerable. I mean, it's really a situation. I'm going through a situation right now with somebody who I know that it would never work out. I'm the one in this particular case who closed the door on our relationship, and I have regrets about doing that because I want her so badly. I crave that love more than anything that I can possibly ever have craved in my life, and that's still my case.
And it's still going back to square one.
Yeah.
And we have to work on it. You listen, get that series on men, then give me an email or a call. I'd love to talk to you more. I have to take a break, but it's a pleasure to talk to you, Jack. A pleasure. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes.
Like many of you, like many Americans, I have felt frustrated and betrayed by the state of the mainstream media in this country, a media whose priorities seem out of step with their responsibilities. We need a media that strengthens democracy, not a media that strengthens the government. We need a media that enriches public discourse, not one that enriches corporations. Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and this is WBAI, listener-supported, non-commercial radio in New York.
TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and, of course, your comments, questions, and observations. That's TalkBack right here on WBAI New York.
From the Red Violin. It always reminds me of the pain of separation. You know, if you think about it, the way it feels, the way that he was describing it to us. You know, you have that incredible bonding that takes place between two people. And then you feel the separation beginning to take place. And somewhere inside everybody, you could feel the ache in your heart, and it rips. If you're still aware, you know, if you're lucky, they give you enough chemistry so you go numb and you don't feel a thing. But somebody like Jack, this is more of his experience. Most of you have known that. The pain of endings, the pain of separation. What is that pain about? Some people, you know, they say chemistry says to you, oh, after a number of years, just dump the bum and walk away. It's easy. You know, they give you the chemistry, you don't feel anything. Now, have you ever seen people, couples in relationships? I've seen this, especially with people who go through menopause. That postmenopausal, it's like, I've got no use for you whatsoever, is the way I feel. You know, I don't know, who are you? You know, what do I want to do with you? Why do I want to even be with you? Why? I don't even get it. I don't even remember. In fact, what nature does is kind of interesting. It gives the mind the ability to rewrite history. And you could rewrite history so that you forget all the beautiful things and only remember the difficult things. Because if you remember the difficult, the beautiful things, it makes it more painful. So when nature is demanding and it's saying to you, my dear dummy, I'm going to run your life and get you out of this relationship because we don't want people to have superior relationships. We want people to have dumb relationships. And that means we're going to run the show. We're going to run it with our chemistry. We're going to make you run away. we're going to make sure that you never get that kind of a union that's possible. Well, you know, hey, nature, take it easy on us. We've got some beauty around here. But I guess the trouble is that if people were to fight, and people were to connect, and people were to keep themselves connected, they would defy nature, and they would cause a new evolution. They would create a new step in humankind, which is what I think we're doing. 212-209-2900, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air with us. Hi, this is Armand DeMille.
Hi, Armand.
Hello there.
Well, I've been married for about 20 years, and everything that you're saying is just ringing true today.
Yeah.
I've been feeling, you know, the menopause. I'm not quite there yet, but, you know, I never had PMS until I turned 40.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like for a week every month or two, I have to almost, I'm afraid to talk to people because I don't know if I'm going to be manic. I don't know if I'm going to be angry. I don't know if I'm going to be depressed.
No.
I try not to make decisions during that time. And then this past weekend, my husband, I think, is having his midlife crisis where he's telling me about, you know, fantasies that he has of living alone in a studio apartment, which is, you know, that's the kind of fantasy I had when our child was young. Our child is now grown and moved away. But he is feeling, he says that, like, that nothing changes and that, like time is passing him by. And he feels like he should have had more to accomplish by now.
What he means is the two of you should be happier than you are, and he feels powerless. There is a book that was written by a good friend of mine, Why Men Leave. And the book did a survey of all the of men and asked them why they left their relationships. And you know what they said over and over again? Because I couldn't make my mate happy. I leave because I can't make her happy. Now let's look at what you're stuck with. You are stuck with this biochemical. What's your name, by the way?
Jamie.
You're stuck with this biochemical reaction that nature decided to put you through. I have people that work with me who are specialists in going through this, who understand it, and not only understand it, but help you keep in touch with your ability to stay bonded as opposed to the ability to push away. Because it's such biological imperatives. I know the way you feel it. You know, the imperative is you feel disconnected. Now, of course, your husband is looking at this and he's saying, here I am. How old is he now, 50?
No, we're in our mid-40s.
Okay, so he's in his 40s, and he's saying it's not a midlife crisis. He's just saying, look, wifey, you're not happy, and I'm not happy, and nothing I could do to make you can make you happy. But he doesn't understand what's really going on. He doesn't understand the chemistry. He thinks it's about the two of you emotionally. He thinks it's about you just giving up, losing interest.
Well, we have had our problems too. I mean, my therapist assures me that I believe her too, that we have probably the healthiest marriage of anyone she knows. But that's, you know, I don't think he's leaving. And I've heard what you've said many times. It's just a little tough for me now because I have felt disconnected. I have felt.
Sure.
That he's pushing me away for years, and like I could deal with my disconnection, but I can't deal with his disconnection right now.
Yeah.
So I was really sad, like all day this weekend when he was, after he told me about it, and you know, he could see by the end of the day. I think that me being upset kind of made him happy in a way, not sadistically, but I think he was touched by it.
Because at least you felt something.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, no, it's not true, by the way. It's not true that he's not going to leave. He will leave. No, I tell you, if he's having fantasies about having his own apartment and that kind of stuff, it's likely that he's going to get up and go. You got to fight. This is where the it fights for all of you, for you, for him, because this is what's happening. Why do you think we have a 50% divorce rate, higher than ever before? Why? Because people are suddenly saying, you know, because more of this is happening, why is more of this miserable menopause going on? And I say miserable menopause because I was talking to one friend the other day who said, but Armand, everybody, my parents went through menopause. There was no problem. My mother went through menopause. Her sisters went through menopause. I think you guys are eating hormones in the water. I think everything we eat has got something in it that in some way is contributing to this disorder that seems to be taking place. And I think both PMS and I think menopause are both manifestations of some extra hormonal kind of treatment that we've been getting in our growing up. But we have to fight it. We have to be aware of it, and he has to be in on it. So he's got to learn. Now, wait, I have to ask Stephanie Dombra, who's here. Stephanie, what was the name of the man who was with us, who was a neurologist who specialized? He was from Canada. Yeah. Okay, Dr. Henry Hess.
Hess. Yes. Perfect menopause.
Perfect menopause by Henry Hess. A great understanding. And I remember we did an interview with him, which you could get on the internet. And part of what he went through, what we talked through, is about what the men are going through as their wives go through this. So I think it's a real battleground. I think society, I think the world, I think pollution, I think our corrupt world with the way it's been dumping everything into our waters is yielding an outrage. And the outrage is manifesting in more of these difficult menopauses, which are winding up separating people from each other. That's what I think. And I think he talks to it. So I think you and your guy got to look at this and say, hey, honey, let's figure this out. I'm going to be going through this. Like, do you have hot flashes as well?
Rarely. I can usually control that. No, it's not a huge thing except right before my period or if it's not coming that month. Like, even if it doesn't come, I still get, like, that week. But
yeah.
I think it's with him too. He's had a disease almost his whole life that he's had to deal with, and it's been several years since he has said "I love you" without it being like on a card, or and so when I've said this to him, he doesn't feel it. He's just always been kind of shy, and he's getting more reserved as the years go by. And I don't doubt that he loves me. The way he acts shows me that he does, but it's almost as though he feels really vulnerable, that he feels like almost like as if he was telling it to me, that it would be the same as me saying his deepest, darkest secrets out on the radio with his first and last name attached to it.
Yeah, I hear.
So I hear.
So it's a fight. You know, he sounds like an intelligent man. He sounds like somebody who you really love. And you're a couple who needs to make war. And I'm saying you need to make war on what is not only happening now, but what's going to happen. Because if these are the early signs of it, it's going to get pretty hairy out there. Let me just give you an example, you know, that we men joke around, men who are with women who are going through menopause, they joke around about the windows being open. Because of the heat and hot flashes, very often if you're living with somebody, that other person who is feeling hot decides to refrigerate the room. And if you're somebody who likes a normal room, suddenly you're sleeping in a room that is very low in temperature. The idea here of refrigerating the room is it's okay. It's not that I feel it, but if I, at any point I need to take the covers off, I could get cold suddenly. Well, men have to learn how to deal with that because they have to learn how to deal with the fact that the room is so cold for this period of time, which could last 7 years, you know? But once you know you're in it, and once you swear your love, once you dedicate yourself, you can work at it and make it happen. And I think you and he need to have a discussion about it.
Yep.
Okay, if I could help in any way, Jamie, let me know. But that book I mentioned to you would be a lot of help.
Okay. Perfect menopause. Okay. Thank you.
Jamie, thanks for calling in.
Okay, thanks so much. Bye.
Well, painful, isn't it? It hurts. It hurts. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, Armand, how are you?
Okay.
We spoke not too long ago, and, you know, forgive my nervousness, but this is an issue that makes me nervous, but I think needs to be spoken about. And can you hear me well?
What is it?
Can you hear me well?
Yeah, I hear you.
Yeah, okay. I don't seek out sex at this point, and I haven't for a long time. And you know, I did see you about a year or so ago, and I don't want to say my name because we spoke about that last time, the embarrassment. And I think that kind of makes a point in and of itself, doesn't it? The fact that we men feel so embarrassed about talking about these issues. But the point I wanted to get to is there is so much sensory overload out there, and I think there's a recoil among some of us who have this kind of maybe rarefied sensitivity that in itself is taboo to talk about as a man, that if you don't say, oh, that's great, you see that billboard up there, there's something questioned about you. Well, shouldn't you have an automatic desire 24/7, as people would think that as a man you should? Maybe some of us like to have a respite or like to have a refractory period that is refractory not just of not having sex, but not having to think about it all the time.
Uh-huh.
And if I grew up in a time where romance were forefront, I wouldn't have to worry about the threat of sex, meaning the threat of having to perform and risking embarrassment. So, I mean, it's a whole complicated matrix of things, and a lot of it refers back to being molested by a male tutor who helped me get by my dyslexia, but also did a lot to compromise my sense of self. So there's a lot of stuff playing off here, you know.
But I think
I don't know where to take it.
Okay, I think you make a lot of sense, and I want to thank you for calling in, and it reminds me of something as well. Because as difficult as it is for us, mm-hmm. just imagine the next generation. Imagine the next generation of kids who are walking into this information-free world, a world of computers with all the visual you want, mm-hmm. TV with all the stuff, high definition, posters everywhere. These kids are coming in, and they are a generation that's going to need some support from the elders. You may not get your act together by the time you get to the end of your life.
And I realize that.
But you know what you could do? You could do what your mentor didn't do. You could be a good mentor. You could be somebody who sponsors and helps younger people.
Can I interject here?
Sure.
I think it's wonderful what you're saying, and I agree with that. And as I told you in the session, I have a wonderful connection with young children, although it's very transitory because I'm not in the mainstream social connection of the human circle where I can bond close enough. But I you know, just the smile of a kid waiting, a very young child on checkout line at a grocery store. Warms my heart to no end.
Yeah.
And I can't obviously get too close to that because you're a man and you have to respect and understand that, you know, the woman there doesn't know who the heck you are.
That's right.
But it's very nourishing, just that moment. And I would like to find a way of incorporating that in a more systematic way.
I hear. That's going to take you some time, but I appreciate you calling in.
Thank you, Armand.
Thank you, Armand.
Take care.
Sure. So what I'm saying is, my friends, if you've been trying to find another way by the fickle finger of fate, if you've been demanded to, or if it's been unfair to you because you get cursed with all of this stuff, you know, if that's happened to you, maybe you're not going to get past it in this lifetime. But we do have jobs, at least, because we're going to be the elders to the next generation. And what we have to teach, is not lessons. We don't have to give lessons. We don't have to say, you know, what you got to do is this and that and that. What we got to do is show them that there is a place in life that where you could be calm, you could be together, and you could be real, and you could be strong. You know, that even if you're emotional, you're strong. 212-209-2900. This is Armando Miller. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Okay.
Okay.
Hello?
Yes.
Yes. I can say my question now?
Yes, you can. What's your name?
Mr. T.
Mr. T.
Okay. I would like to know, I'm 70 years old, and I would like to know, how do you ever know that you're really in love with a woman when you treat every woman that you know the same way?
Is that the way you feel, Mr. T?
I feel that I've never been in love with a woman accordingly the way people describe love.
Uh-huh. So you've never felt that complete abandon where you really lose yourself in another person.
Yeah.
You see every woman as just a nice kind of convenience. Affection is nice. It's sweet. But you haven't felt the attachment yet, right?
Right.
Uh-huh. That's all right.
Yeah. How do you know when this happens, or
if it should happen at all?
Or should it happen at all?
That's a real question. You know, is it a mark of our sanity, or is it a sign of our not being so sane? I can't say that love is the right thing. A love, romantic love, is the right thing. What if you were able to be distant and be friends with every woman? What if that were your model? What if that's your form of love? Why is your name Mr. T, by the way? Why don't you have a first name?
That's what everybody calls me.
Everybody calls you Mr. T?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you see, what you're doing is creating a distance by doing that. And so what I suggest, being a 70-year-old young guy who's got about another bunch of years to go, give yourself a first name. Make one up. And see what it's like to live with a first name. And you're going to see everything changes.
But
instead
what
of this
what
distance,
is that going to do as far as you recognizing? I mean, you see every day.
Mr. T,
say,
have
oh,
you
I'd
not...
love to go out with that person or this or that. But how do you know when you've met that person that...
You will only know when you give yourself a first name. I mean, listen to me. I know you know I'm a smart man. You know, I know you know that. And I know you know that I have a sense of something about you. What you've done is always created a distance between you and everybody else by giving yourself the name of Mr. T. And by having everybody call you Mr. T, they put you at a distance. If you give yourself a first name, people will get closer to you. And when people start getting closer to you, you're going to feel that reaction to somebody that's going to make you feel that kind of love that you're looking for. I say it's really worth the time. And you know, it's a nice thing at age 70 when people say, Mr. T, say, no, I've changed it. My name is Andre. I'm going to give myself a first name. And that people start calling you by the first name, you watch how everybody puts out to you a little more love, a little more kindness, and they give you even more hugs. That's what I recommend to you, okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
Okay.
Sure. I love that. A man with no first name. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I just find you folks remarkable. If you want to learn more about what we're doing here, go to thepositivemind.com or go to WBAI.org. And we at WBAI thank you for your very existence. I'll be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends.
Colombia will never be the same after those 61 historic days of the indigenous and popular Minga, which was initiated on October 11th and culminated in a massive rally in the Simón Bolívar Plaza in downtown Bogotá in November. Hi, I'm Mario Murillo, host of the Friday edition of Wake Up Call, inviting you to join myself and Teocasin Ghost Horse for the New York premiere of the long-anticipated documentary A Country of Peoples Without Owners, the Indigenous and Popular Minga of 2008, Monday, June 29th at 7 p.m. at the Labowitz Theater of New York University, located at 715 Broadway at Washington Place in Manhattan. The film, A Country of Peoples Without Owners, was produced by the communication team of the Association of Indigenous Councils of Northern Cauca, ASIN. Proceeds from the event will be used to help get ASIN's community radio station back on the air after it was sabotaged in late December. For more information, call us at 212-209-2978 or go to mamaradio.blogspot.com.
La Minga los invita a eso.
Hello, listeners. You're all invited to the Great Hudson River Clearwater Revival June 20th and 21st at Croton Point Park. Pete Seeger, Rich Havens, Arlo Guthrie, and Taj Mahal are among the headliners. There won't be live coverage this year, so you're going to have to be there to experience it. Do yourself a favor. Treat yourself. At the same time, support Pete's vision of a way to help save our planet. So get your tickets for the festival by logging on to www.clearwater.org or calling 503-265-2270. That's 503-265-2270.
What are you listening to?
What you are listening to?
Yeah, but I don't know what it is.
It's WBAI.
Wow, sounds weird.
Weird, but I like it.
I like it.
What is it?
It's WBAI.
I like it.
Did you honor your pledge?
To go low carb?
To send money to WBAI.
Well, you mean write a check?
Yeah, I mean write a check.
I wrote it.
Well, now send it.
Oh, send it.
To WBAI.
120 Wall Street.
New York, New York.
10005.
WBAI. I like it.
Yeah!
WBAI. I like it. We hope that you like it, too. In hopes that you will continue to support this listener-sponsored, commercial-free radio station in the center of the FM dial. And you can find us always online at WBAI.org. And did you know that you can make a secure pledge at that website, WBAI.org, at any time? You don't have to wait for our major fundraising drives to do that. And in fact, yesterday we found out that we made at least over $10,000 on our website, WBAI.org. So you could take this opportunity right now or anytime when you get a moment and make that contribution to WBAI.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.